Greetings, you're listening to St. Paul's Unseen Dimension. My name is Tom, and today is Thursday, February 17th. I started this podcast about 10 o'clock, and then I got a phone call, and then 10:30, I was off the phone, and then had to doink around down here in the basement to find an appropriate outlet for my tablet, because I didn't want to use the PC tonight, and let's just say, for the sake of argument, that the struggle that I went through today to put this whole project together has been one where it is as if I am Sisyphus pushing the stone up the hill, only to have it roll back down again. And so I've been fighting that fight today. Actually, the whole day has been kind of like that. I'm an artist, and I work as a writer, and I work as a gun trainer. And two of those professions do not require me to acquire materials, like sculpting materials. I have a plethora of them. I have plenty of casting material. I have drawing supplies, I have paint, I have drawing tables, plural. I have a computer to do graphics work. You see where I'm going with this? In order to do one of my three jobs, I have to acquire materials to do the work that I do. And sometimes those materials come in packaging. And sometimes those packages, they collect. They become more than one. Like, one nice box becomes 15 nice boxes. And, oh, I think I could use this for something. And next thing I know, I have enough cardboard to build a life-size Millennium Falcon. Now, I've said this before. The last time I did a purge, which I think was last year, and this year I'm starting the purge a little early, and today I spent the better portion of 4.5 hours just cutting up cardboard and putting it into small enough digestible pieces to put into trash bags so that I can fool the trash guy into taking away this cardboard. And I know that sounds like a horse shit thing to do, because the recyclers, they won't fucking take it. The reason why they won't take it is because it won't fit in the blue tote. See, we have like two of these big blue bins, right? And I have filled them up with things like glass bottles. See, now getting back to the glass bottles thing, I'm not an alcoholic. These are olive oil bottles and all these other really pretty bottles that I was going to use in the process of building a cob house, I was actually going to try to build like one of these recycled material houses, you know, where you had like instead of just windows, you had like glass bottles that you use to bring light into the house, and I had all these bottles saved, and I'm so anyway, they're all in these two recycle bins, and each one weighs about 300 pounds now. And so I don't have any room for cardboard, and I've got a stockpile of cardboard right now that I could literally probably build a homeless shelter out of it. I mean, you know, you spray it down with some wax or something like that, and you keep the rain out of it. You could build housing with this stuff. And I have that much of it. I mean, there is literally a cat scratching post factory in my garage right now, if I were to cut it all into strips. And see, that's the thing about being an artist, is that you see the potential of every single material you bring in the house, no matter what it is. No matter what it is, you see the potential of how it could be used. Like, those tires could be turned into planters. Oh my God, I could do something with that. That stove, I could turn it into some kind of giant flaming robot. You know, just all of these things. You buy things with the intention of it. At some point, when it wears out, I can turn it into art. And pretty soon you have a house full of shit that you probably should not have acquired in the first place. See, and that's one of the things about being an artist, is that you not only do you see the potential of everything, but you also see how much money you have invested in the shit. And it's like, fuck, I can't let that go. I've got $4 in that. That cost me 11 cents. I can't throw that away. That's 11 cents. That's 24 cents for that piece of paper right there. I can't throw that away. I spent a dollar and a half for that. I can't throw that away. And next thing you know, you're just like, you're nickel and diming yourself to what you think is some form of crazy person's hoarder's prosperity. And you're not. You're just hanging on to shit. You know, it's like renting a tool versus buying a tool. I bought my tools because I'm going to need them. And there's no guarantee that I'll be able to get a rental or afford a rental. So I bought the tools. And what have I got? I have enough fucking tools to open a goddamn warehouse and like a hardware store. This is what happens when you're an artist. Pretty soon, you've got one of everything. Why, yes, I have some curare darts. What can I do for you? You know, it's like, why would you have curare darts? Because I needed them for an art project. Really? No. I wanted to see if I could create curare, one tree or two tree curare. If you don't know what that means, is that if you shoot a monkey with a curare dart, and he only jumps from one tree to the next, and he falls, that's one tree curare. Two tree curare is if he makes one tree to the next tree, and then he drops. See, that's how this stuff works. Why do you have those blowfish? That's none of your damn business. So anyway, I'm going off on a tear here today, because that's all I've been doing is cleaning up after myself. And because I'm an easy target, and because I'm sitting right here, I can take the hit. I'm an adult, and I'm intellectually honest about the kind of shit that I do because I grew up poor. This is what happens when you grow up poor. If you've never grown up poor, then you have no idea what the struggle is like. But if you have, and if you've ever had to suffer, and you've ever had to really scrape and scrounge and all this other shit, then you know, chances are, you have a ton of stuff in your house that you have absolutely no fucking use for, but you can't bear to part with it because you've got an investment in it. See, that's my problem. I've got a ton of art supplies that I should just gift to someone, but I won't, because I have potential art that I'm going to create with it. When I was a watercolor artist and a painter and all that other stuff, I thought I had talent. And I bought a whole bunch of paints that are very, very expensive. And I'm still sitting on them. Why? Because they were expensive then, and they're fucking 20 times that now. As a matter of fact, one of my favorite sculpting compounds, ever since they hooked up with Amazon, has now tripled their fucking prices. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I used to buy this crap for $20. And now it's 50. Albeit that was 20 years ago. So you see where I'm going with all this stuff. Inflation has been destroying the productivity and the prosperity of most artists since time immemorial. Unless we're talking, you know, like Paleolithic man who used his own poop to make cave paintings. That was kind of like a thing where you're producing your own art materials from scratch. I'm going to eat a bunch of blueberries and see where this goes. I need to paint a blue cow. No, I didn't mean that. By the way, this is one of those in Vodka Veritas podcasts. I'm actually having a shot because I'm an adult. I can do what I want. No one's the boss of me. There, I said it. And I didn't laugh. You guys can laugh all you want to, but I am telling the truth. And I've only had like a couple of sips of this stuff, and it's really good stuff. It's the Russian Standard Platinum. And it's you can get it on discount if you go to what the hell is the name of that place? Some place where Karens buy all their wine. Total Wine. That's it. I don't know why, for some reason, I thought Total Haircut. Total Karen. Oh, my God. It's been quite a week. All I've done is struggle. And I had to put a new battery in the new car. It's just frustration after frustration after it's the life that I lead is very simple. All I do is I write and I make art, and occasionally I do gun training, and I do a lot of like dog training, and that's about it. And occasionally I go out and get coffee and harass people. And that's my life. You know, I don't talk to a whole lot of folks. And those who do talk to me, well, you know, they've paid that price. Now they no longer have any questions about what hell might be like. But I find that lately I've been struggling with the aspects of what the future may hold. Which is why I am greatly concerned about the direction of which way this country is going. Who's leading it? Who's running it? Who's really running it? And why are they running it into the ground? Why is my generation not stepping up and putting some of these people in their place? Is it because we're all trying to make a living and trying to survive? Or is it because, you know, we have this idea that there's some kind of normalcy bias, that things will all just work out? I'd like to send a message to my entire generation. Have we learned nothing from what media taught us as children? Thundar the Barbarian could happen at any moment. A meteor could come flying through. A rogue comet could split the moon in half. It could lay waste to the planet. Next thing you know, I'm running around in a loincloth wearing a sun sword. And I've got a friend named Ukla the Mock. And I've got two little fat gelatinous creatures named Gloop and Gleep. And a stone monkey named Igu. Wait. Was that Herculoids? Yeah, I think that was. And then there was like the little ram guy that shot stuff out of his horn. See where I'm going with this? There are many variations of what the future could be. I've been playing Cyberpunk 2077, by the way, and I've learned a lot. I've learned that that quite frankly, if I could upgrade my body, I would do it in a heartbeat. So long as I could kind of still have the tensile feeling and stuff like that, as long as I'm not robbed of that, that'd be perfect. Because this shoulder thing that I've got going on right now is driving me insane. You know, it starts with like a knee replacement. And the next thing you know, you're getting like brand new muscles made out of some kind of poly-Kevlar fiber that, you know, when hit with electrical impulses, you know, gives you the strength of 100 people. You know, that kind of shit I would do, you know. But at some point, you're just a head on a robot body at that point. And you're just like, you're not human anymore, physically. Though you may have feelings and all those other things, you also may have a certain amount of madness from sensory deprivation. See, that's the future that I worry about. I worry about humanity becoming so foreign to itself, where these little brains are suspended in these robot bodies and they have no idea what it was ever like to be human. And that's when they treat us with a certain amount of indifference. And that was the idea that I had about the alien grays. They're just future versions of us. You know, small brains with some augmentation in these little synthetic bodies. And because, you know, there's so many of these things that they had to economize on the material. So that instead of making people 7 feet tall, they made them like 2.5, 3 feet tall. That's why flying saucers aren't very, very spacious when you go on board. You know, some of them are pretty huge, but the man-made ones are particularly large. But the small ones, those are flowed by genuine aliens, which I think are just little brains in these little synthetic robot bodies that are, I don't know, biosynthetic. It's an idea that I'm working on right now. Whether or not aliens are just future versions of us that have come back in time to see where everything went wrong. Or more importantly, how fast can they change things to make things go right for them? You know, it's tough. It's tough to believe in this stuff anymore. Today I read an article about how we've managed to warp space-time on some on a scale that's, you know, like the size of a pencil point. I thought, really? You warp time, but only, you know, you didn't like do it in a room. You warped it in like this little tiny space, the size of a pencil point. How did you even know? What could possibly have been going on in that little pencil point? You could observe the warping of time. How do you test that? Do you have a tiny, tiny watch that went back in time or did something? I don't understand. And it's not that I'm an idiot. It's just that I need to have the process explained to me. Mostly because my own time warp stuff, which doesn't involve Riff Raff or Richard O'Brien, it has more to do with the fact that, I mean, you can get lost in time pretty quickly if you believe in it. I mean, I don't believe in time, which is why I'm never where I need to be. And sometimes I'm exactly where I need to be. But they have this idea, and it's not just an idea, it's actual proof, is that people, when they work on tiny, tiny, tiny projects, like scale models, for instance, their perception of time is different than those who work in the real world. You think that time moves super fast when in fact it just drags on. And I can tell you, it's like time is absolutely subjective to the individual that's experiencing it. It's like if you have to go get a root canal. From the dentist perspective, it's like a 10-minute job or whatever. Maybe it's a 20-minute job or a half hour or whatever. But for you, it's unending. If you have to listen to somebody give a dissertation on political science, it could be an eternity. Listening to my podcast, which only runs about 40 minutes, can seem like hours. You know, and eating an ice cream cone may take you 10 minutes, but it seems like it just evaporated in a matter of seconds. And you didn't really get to enjoy that ice cream because you were afraid of it melting and running all over your hands. So you stuffed your face as fast as you could, and then you got an ice cream headache, which lasted forever. Because it's subjective. And that's the thing about time is that, you know, I mean, time to me is a construct. I don't believe it actually exists. I don't think that it believe. I don't. The reason why I say it, I don't believe that it's something you can quantify. The only way you can quantify time is with a man-made invention called the clock that counts tick, 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 tick. You know, how much time it is from you to move from point A to point B, for something to travel from point A to point B. That's, and it's a mathematical breakdown that's entirely a construct of a human mind. Because aliens sure as shit don't even understand what time is. Like, time? No. We don't recognize your passage of time. That's stupid. Who would do that? You know, time-traveling aliens, of course, and that would be a little different, because then they're like, okay, we need to go back to 1947, that Roswell thing. They go get Jim a tow truck and pull him out of the desert. You know, I mean, and then next thing you know, you've got two ships down. And they're like, okay, we need to quit sending ships because none of you people can know how to drive. No, I'm kidding. It is one of those things where I think in some instances, time would have to be absolutely quantifiable. If you're doing time travel, then you have to be able to quantify it. But realistically, it's not possible because time doesn't really even exist in the from the standpoint that there are multiple dimensions created every time you make a decision. You see, I started to ponder this a lot more, and I've done a show about this once before about multiple universes and the multiple dimensional theory. But if you wake up every day, let's say your day starts at 6 o'clock in the morning. And you start your day, you get up, take a shower, go to the bathroom, do your manicure, clean your face up, put on makeup or whatever, you know, man or woman, whatever. And you get your day started, and then, you know, you have a routine. And one day you change that routine. That's another dimension. So there's two dimensions. There's you who drinks coffee and then the other person that drinks tea. Then there's the guy that had coffee and toast. And then there's the one that had the tea and the Danish. And then the next thing you know, you've got these multiple universes that just simply break down based on one choice. Do I have coffee this morning? Do I want to go to school? Do I want to kiss somebody this morning? Or, you know, just you see where I'm going with this. Making a simple decision can alter your entire existence. Now, take that logic tree back to your birth. There's a certain amount of time where you have absolutely no power. You know, you're pissing and shitting yourself. You're in a diaper. First couple of years. By age 3, though, you're starting to make your own little decisions. And even then, you're not really that powerful to move time one way or another or change something. Unless, you know, you're destructive or evil or something like that, then you might. But that where I'm going with this is that there comes a point where your decisions start to affect you, not only you but everyone around you. And those decisions, if they're made or unmade, create these alternate realities or alternate timelines. And then next thing you know, you've got this multidimensional theory, which pretty soon then you've got to figure out how to get to what dimension. Not only do you have to figure out how to go back in time, but you need to go back to the right dimension where something happened. Because let's say if Oppenheimer, right, the guy that gave us the atom bomb, right? Let's say, you know, in 1927, he was hit by a car. He made a decision to go get Thai food. And then stepped off of a curb, got clipped by a horse-drawn buggy and crushed under its wheels. What happens then? That changes time. Changes time. Albert Einstein, his dad, decides that Albert's a fucking moron and sends him off to crazy school. And Albert never recovers. Albert dies in an institution, thus negating anything in the way of relativity. No physics, no nothing. Gone. With Albert Einstein being institutionalized because he was slow. All it takes is one decision. You can absolutely disrupt the entire timeline and existence of humanity. And then, but those are the big people. Those are those people that make those big changes in the world. But sometimes it doesn't even take that much. You know, if, what's his name? Not Sirhan, because he shot Robert F. Kennedy. No, I'm thinking about this other guy that started World War I by killing Archduke Franz Ferdinand. I just said his name the other day, too. Where I'm going with this is if that had not happened, then all of a sudden you've got no World War I, no cause to go to war. Hitler never's invented. You don't have Hitler. One decision, you know. And it's just, it is what it is. You take a look at all of it. And for anyone to pretend that there's actual time travel being a possibility, I don't think it's real. I don't think time travel stories are really, really capable of being something you could manufacture. I don't think that you could actually go back in time and visit yourself. I don't. I think that you could go back to a timeline where you didn't exist, or where you you hadn't made some of those decisions and ended up where you were. I don't think that there's any of this kind of like, you know, you can go back in time and talk to yourself and fix some things. You know, I think that you get to go back to an alternate reality or a different dimension where you exist side by side with a variation of you. And you can say, well, you know, hey, where I'm from, this happened. And maybe don't make that decision if it comes up. And so that's the thing, is that, you know, it's, that's time travel, that's interdimensional travel, that's all that stuff wrapped up in one little conversation. And, you know, I mean, when I think about the future, what it actually holds here in the United States and where things are going in my country, I don't see a lot of positives, but at the same time, I'm hopeful, because there are things that are, that we are just a couple of decades away from, that I know will absolutely, if those discoveries and those creations find their way to the public sector, it will be absolutely, the societal upheaval towards the good will be so amazing that humanity won't have the problems that it does right now. The issue that I have is that when these societal upheavals happen, we need to make sure that the people that have been keeping us held back for centuries, make sure that they no longer have power on those profound changes that will benefit humanity and help us move forward. I wish that we had people that were not controlling everything for profit. Now, bear in mind that it has nothing to do with capitalism. Capitalism is a construct that we have never experienced in our lifetimes. If you have lived prior to 1930, you may have experienced capitalism. But anybody that's born after 1930, you have not lived a day in a capitalist society, because all we have done for the last 100 years, since the inception of the Federal Reserve, all we have done is created a backstop for big business, we have bailed out the rich. We have socialized the risks and privatized the profits. And we have lobbyists in Washington, D.C. who have guaranteed that those revenue streams will never end. If you, I don't know if you've seen the latest video about the yearly COVID shot that Joe Biden wants to roll out. And you see the CEO talking about it. He's not just a CEO. He's actually the guy that runs the FDA. He's saying it's going to be an unending revenue stream for Pfizer and all those other brands. And I'm like, you keep your fucking vaccines. I'm done. I don't trust you. I don't trust you to have my interests in mind. I think you want to eradicate the human race. I think you're all a bunch of goddamn reptiles. And as a matter of fact, consequently, if you look up, do lizard people rule the world, you will find, instead of taking you to websites and videos where there's proof of these things, you go to websites where it's all conspiracy theory. It is. It's absolutely ridiculous. It used to be where you'd look up lizard people, and you'd find 101 videos back in 2000, was it 2002, 2003, when George Bush was in office, he had bodyguards that were aliens and shape changers. I'm sorry, I'm turning into Alex Jones. I don't know why. But it's because Alex Jones was one of those people on the forefront and on the cusp of it. But man, if you pay attention, you can see these guys, their eyes change from frame to frame. They go from being human to being little lizard slits. And you would see these videos, and of course they'd be narrated by somebody like Alex Jones or David Icke, and they would be profoundly outrageous. Because if you know anything about cameras back in the day, and I know a lot about photography, and I know a lot about videography, and these are things that happened during the days where we were talking about 420p, 480p, and then eventually we had 720p and 1080p, and you know, now we're at 4K, you know. I mean, these are things that were, these graphics and things like that, they were not what I would call high definition. And you'd see these videos where there'd be these artifacts obscuring certain things, and it was because there's a certain amount of RAM that went on board all of these little chipsets that could tell you, you know, what you were seeing, what you weren't seeing, and they would make these decisions that would, you know, put these pixels in the right places so that way it looked like something. So when you would shoot video, of course you're going to see, like, these people, all the videos that you saw during the 80s and 90s of UFOs that had, like, these great big blocks and stuff like that were just, you know, it looked grainy, it looked like blocky Atari 2600 graphics. That's the little GPU chipset and the CCD camera lens doing its thing. And nowadays we've got these four. I mean, I've got like, I can shoot 8K video with my phone, and if I was to catch a reptile person, you know, one of these reptilians, you know, shape changing, all of this stuff, it would actually look like it, instead of, you know, these artifact things that you see. Look, you can see their eyes, or they're not blinking the right way. They're blinking sideways instead of up and down. You know, it's just, you see where I'm going with this? Probably not, because I'm not really visual here. I'm only audio. But when you think about these things, if you look up certain topics, they take you from, you know, your simple wanting to find something. Like, do you believe in ghosts? If you believe in ghosts and you're going to go ahead and you look up ghosts online, instead of taking you to like a whole bunch of different websites that take you to these, like, the top 10 ones that they have in their algorithm. And it's the same thing with like lizard people, UFOs, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, all of that stuff, Loch Ness Monster, every kind of paranormal thing that you can imagine. It all goes to the same blocky bullshit sites with the same people that have been basically more or less controlling the narrative for the last 20 years. And now they got some of the new people that they're bringing on board in order to control the narrative even more. Like, if you look up UFOs and you look up Disclosure and stuff like that, you used to find like a Stephen Greer kind of stuff, but now they've got this other guy, Luis Elizondo, and all these other morons. But it's all the same, it's the same sock puppetry. It's all the same bullshit all over again. It's just repackaged for a new society, a new generation. And when you see that kind of control being exerted, then the censorship going on online with various platforms and various topics, especially if you're talking about COVID, you're going to be heavily censored. If you talk about guns or any of that other stuff, you're going to find yourself heavily censored. You talk about civil rights, you're going to be heavily censored. If you start telling people that you live in a republic as opposed to a democracy, you're going to be silenced. You're going to be, you know, censored. And that's the problem, is that we have this definite push for informational control that prevents people from making educated decisions about the things that they should do for their own lives. If I want to find pornography, I can find limitless amounts of that stuff with little fuss. Cat memes, I can find a million of those things. Dog pictures, anything that will not harm the status quo or change your mind or change your perspective about anything important, you could find that with a limitless amount of search. You know, you will not see the same photo twice. But you look up, let's say, lizard people. You look up, did John F. Kennedy, was he assassinated by a lone nut? You look into any kind of thing that might be controversial, and you will find it directed to a small handful of the same sites, and they just keep repeating the same shit. You won't find anything new. You have to know where to look for it. And unless you, here's the thing, is that that's Google, though. If you use like DuckDuckGo, use Brave, things like that, you might have a chance at finding something different outside of the mainstream. If you're using Safari, if you're using, you know, Internet Explorer, heaven forbid, even, you know, Firefox to a degree. If you're typing into Google, though, you know, they are the gatekeepers of all the information. And none of it is, you know, I mean, it's, none of it is going to be the complete truth. You're not going to see another side of something. Do yourself a favor. Just look up, do lizard people rule the world? And I promise you, when you look that up, you're not going to find videos of, you know, shape-changing aliens and stuff like that. You're going to find a bunch of debunking narrative that says, no, it's all conspiracy and da 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 da. Don't even think about that. That couldn't be possibly real. And you take if you do the same thing with COVID, you do the same thing with just about anything paranormal, you're going to find that what I'm saying is true. So that's the reason why I don't really talk about the paranormal as much. Unless I've got something real to talk about, something that may have happened, something I've captured on video, something I've, you know, I've experienced, yeah, I'll talk about it. But lately, it's been I'm going through a bit of a dry spell when it comes to the weird stuff. Although I will say that I've had some amazing dreams lately about dead people. People that I was surprised to find out were deceased. And kind of a shock, actually. I just watched the Ghostbusters Afterlife movie, and I was actually quite impressed by the digital work that they did on Harold Ramis' character, Spengler. And how good it looked. And how much love was really put into that. And here's the thing, is I didn't even see the first Ghostbusters film. And I have no guilt whatsoever. None. Also because it was just, it was the 80s, I didn't feel like it. I didn't go to a lot of movies during the 80s. Mostly because there wasn't anything that great. And Ghostbusters being what it is, it was entertaining. I've seen clips and stuff like that. I thought it was pretty funny, parts that I've seen. But watching this movie, I'm watching it kind of like, you know, kind of dial the whole franchise in and close it out. You know, with a nice little send-off for Harold Ramis. A really good send-off for Harold Ramis. And the thing of it was directed by Jason Reitman, whose father, shortly after I see this movie, he passes away. And I thought, well, that's very strange. It's very creepy. It's very sad, too. But you know what? It was a nice movie. But where I was going with this is that living in a haunted house, you tend to be open to a certain level of communication, whether you like it or not. And that's the thing about the spirit realm, is that once you drift off into sleep, you really don't have any real power of keeping things at bay. You know, things that want to filter their way in from the ether will show up. And I've had some dreams about my father lately, which leads me to believe that it's a possibility that he has passed on, that I didn't know about this. And I'm going to tell a horrible story about my father. Actually, no, maybe I won't. Let's just say for the sake of argument, he was an imperfect man, and he was an imperfect parent. And I have many stories that I could tell of his shortcomings as a person. But I had this dream, and he was not really being very nice to me in this dream. And And when I woke up, it set the hamster in motion on on the treadmill that it's on inside my head. And I wondered if he felt any guilt whatsoever for the things that he did wrong to wrong me personally, and whether or not that he would be intellectually honest enough to know that his and my mother's behaviors affected me profoundly, and affected my brother too, And my two half brothers, my father's behavior probably affected them greatly too. And see, that's the thing, is that if you take a look at those types of dreams, it's not just your subconscious trying to tell you something. Sometimes when I dream about people who I think are dead or are dead, usually I know the difference between my subconscious throwing me a curve, like, hey, this is what we're trying to work out here, you got some issues, versus I'm getting paid a visit by something else. And and then I had that other thought, that perhaps what was visiting me in this sleep state, because I'm a big believer that once you die, you're dead, and your soul is split into three parts: the good that you did, the bad that you did, because those are positive energies and negative energies. And then there's this thing that's the soul, that's the driving force, that's the energy, the power cosmic, if you will, that imbues your body with light and life. And and those things that you did wrong, all of those horrible negative things that made you be a bad person, those things are burned away. And all of the good things that you did to make you a good person, those are also burned away. That's more like it's a karma kind of thing. It's like the negative goes to the negative and the positive goes to the positive, and then they permeate, they reconstitute this pool that people draw from. Like if you're not necessarily a bad person, when you're born, you're not a good person when you're born, but there are certain things that enter your world and how you process it and what you do with those energies, whether they be good or bad, they come from somewhere. And when you die, they go back to where that came from. It's like, it's the idea that every breath that you take must be given back at some point. The air you take in, you have to breathe out. And that's the thing, is that if you use energy, whether it be good or bad, it has to go somewhere. And the good, the energy that you create and all the love and all that other stuff, it's going to go back into the great big pool of good. And all of the bad things that you ever did, all the nonsense you ever put people through, all of that stuff's going to go to the negative pool. And then that thing that was your soul, that was your mind, that's your consciousness, that part of you that's imbued everything with life, that energy is pure in and of itself, and it can never be destroyed, and it moves on to the next existence as a blank slate. But it's still you. You have a vibrational equivalent, an energy signature, and you're gone out of your body. That's what I believe. That's what I honestly believe. But I think that sometimes that when somebody dies and they've led a pretty shitty life and they have quite the negative little thing, that latches on, every once in a while, these things become sentient enough to where they can pretend to be somebody that they're not. And every once in a while, they can go visit, to carry out some unfinished business, if you will. When my ex passed away, she actually did something very kind, I think. Or at least she tried to. I honestly think that the positive that she left behind. Tried to. I've never had any negative dreams about my ex, but I've had plenty of negative dreams about my mother and my father. It's not because they're negative people or that my ex was all that positive. It's just that these are the things that have filtered into my sleep state from somewhere else. And when I think about the whole idea of spirituality and the nature of spiritual communication, for that matter, it becomes very frightening because once you've passed from this world, you know, you don't come back. You don't come back here. But those things that you leave behind, that signature that you leave behind, it does. It stays here because it's part of that pool. And like I said, sometimes that pool can create this intelligence, you know, whether it be good or bad. And I think that I think some of that is aided and abetted by the people that know you, the memories that they have of you. And I think that too feeds into the pool. And that's the reason why I think ghosts exist. Because there's something that's left behind. If we're talking about dyed-in-the-wool spiritual ghosts, they're not demons. They're just this. They're this artifact that's. It's an expulsion of energy of some kind that has its own sentience behind it, and it has a thought in that moment. And sometimes, you know, sometimes the damnedest things can happen that way. That's the reason why I don't leave any speakers turned on. Because I've had some weird shit happen in my house. And this has been one, like I said, I'm just going to say this now. I know that this has been a long-winded, meandering monologue. And I apologize for the fact that I don't have any other guests on, and it's just me just more or less just doing a stream of consciousness thing. But yet at the same time, I don't feel like I have to apologize. It's just, it seems like the courteous thing to do because I've absorbed so much of your time while you listen to this. And if you do listen to this, I do appreciate it. And I make a lot of jokes and stuff like that, but the one thing I really don't joke around about that much is this idea that spirits exist, because they do exist. I've seen some things, and I've heard, I've experienced some things, and I can't explain it. I just can't. I've tried to recreate things, and I was unable to do that. And even people I've had come into my house and check things out, we've got nothing here that we can use as an explanation. We have no way of explaining this. So if you know my father, and if he's deceased, thanks for telling me, you rat bastards. No, it's okay. Whether he lives or he isn't alive, I'm not so sure that I would care one way or another. I've made peace with the fact that he and I, we will never resolve our differences, simply because there is such a rift and such a gulf between us that it just cannot be bridged. And the reason why I say that is because I have no desire to do that. Not after what I've been through. But that's a negative thing that I shouldn't really leave this podcast on. I will say this, though. I've seen some very beautiful things, though. And I've had some wonderful conversations with people who I didn't realize they were dead. Until after I looked it up. And It's kind of interesting too. You know, every once in a while you get these thoughts in your head that something's not quite right, and then next thing you know, you're waking up and you're like, you find out that, hey, this person passed away like a day or so ago, and you're like, wow, I just dreamed about them, and it was interesting. I don't know. I have, like I said, I have these periodic dreams where, you know, somebody I used to know inhabits that space. And, you know, and every once in a while it can be negative, but usually it's pretty positive. I've had some pretty good laughs, too, every once in a while. Like my grandmother, she visited one time, and it was an interesting dream. It really was. And I remember just her laughing about a whole bunch of stuff and reminding me of who I really am on the inside. And that was kind of nice. So, I mean, you know, not everything's all gloom and doom. I'm trying to be optimistic about the future of the world because I'm hopeful. I've got relatives and I got friends and stuff like that. They've got kids, and I just don't want them to have to make a decision whether or not they're going to be, you know, having to fight mutants or, you know, monsters or zombies or any of that other stuff. And I don't want them to have to make decisions whether or not they, you know, want to eat dog food or human food simply because of necessity. I'd like the prosperity and the beauty of America to return to it. And I'd like every communist sympathizer to leave my country. But that's a whole nother rant entirely. Anyway, I've been ranting and raving here for about 52 minutes now, and I think I should probably let you go enjoy the rest of your day. I have things to do. I have garbage to take out. I have a trash truck to thwart with all of my cardboard and all that stuff. I think I'm getting to where I might actually be getting some sleep tonight. So anyway, I apologize for not getting in a couple of podcasts sooner, but I'm hoping that the next one I do will actually have something paranormal or some kind of structure to it. So that way it doesn't seem like I'm just rambling. God, I should probably dump this out. I've got like a shot of vodka I haven't even tried yet. I had like two sips of this stuff, and it's just like, oh, it's fine. But, I don't know, maybe I'm just not the... I didn't train enough as a child to be an alcoholic. And as an adult, I don't have the tolerance for it. And so I'm staring at this poured shot, and I'm thinking, if only I'd had children, I could be putting them to sleep with this, like my parents did. No, I'm just kidding. That's not true at all. My parents never used alcohol to sedate me. It was always Dimetapp, always Dimetapp. And on that note, all kidding aside, I hope you folks have a fantastic week, and take care. Good night.